intimidating. Can I get a sound check for Zoom? I see thumbs up. Good. Great. And folks here in the Zendo are comfy, cozy. So good evening, folks. As you may have noticed, our beloved teachers are still away, enjoying this beautiful weather. My name is River. I use she, her pronouns. And I agreed to continue the study that we're doing of Kyra Jewel-Lingo's wonderful book, We Were Made for These Times. And I'll leave this in the kitchen for folks here in the Zendo if you want to just take a quick look at it after our program this evening. But it's a really wonderful book. And for those folks who are joining us partway through, Kyra was a student of Thich Nhat Hanh, and in fact, was a nun in the Plum Village lineage for 20 years, and then left, became a layperson again, and practiced in the Theravada tradition, and the insight tradition through Spirit Rock. And so brings this beautiful quality of just almost universal, non-denominational practice. And as a woman of color in America, brings this awareness of social justice and anti-racist practice and engaged Buddhist practice into a very kind and compassionate articulation of this practice that we all share. So we've made it to chapter 7, Calmly Facing the Eight Worldly Winds. And I'll do a short reading from this chapter. And then there's a guided meditation that Kyra has offered, and maybe we can do that. And then I'll share some very brief reflections, and there will hopefully be time for group discussion. In many countries across Asia, in Buddhist temples, you find a common symbol of a wheel with eight spokes with a hole in the center of the axle. I learned that this represents the Dharma, or the teachings of the Buddha, which are like the wheel being set in motion, and the eight spokes represent the Noble Eightfold Path taught by the Buddha. While living in Sri Lanka, I was offered an additional meaning to this symbol. The eight spokes represent the eight worldly winds. They are four pairs of opposites: pleasure and pain, gain and loss, praise and blame, and fame and disrepute. They are the four things we hope for and the four things we fear. The wheel of these eight winds is always turning. It never stops. So we can't get comfortable with the joys of pleasure and gain. Nor should we identify the way, and we just keep turning no matter what we do, how we live. This doesn't mean anything, but that even as we align our passion, harm will always be able to stop blowing and changing. When we suffer, there is nothing we can do to shift the situation of our lives. In both cases, spaciousness to remember, Buddha said, when we accept that this life is our tie that her name dear. Are other folks having difficulty? It may be either our connection or it may be.
Yes.
Yeah. Does that? How's that? How is that? So,
carry on. Just checking.
I'm going to keep reading. These are the worldly winds in action. So, Thich Nhat Hanh has offered us there, and I'm very happy. My darling, I know you suffer. That is why I'm here for you. My darling, I suffer, and I need your help. My darling, this is a happy moment. Darling, you are partly right. You can read about them. Practice the sixth mantra. It has the wisdom of the eight worldly winds in it because we take neither the praise nor the blame as the complete description of who we are. When people appreciate us and affirm us, but we have many weaknesses, so they are partly right. Similarly, when others blame, they may see shortcoming, but also know we have our beauty and our goodness. So that practicing this mantra keeps us humble when we might fall into pride, and of all, it helps us remember that the wheel is ever turning. It's the hole in the center. It is empty. From the center, we get a reminder of our own emptiness, with ourselves as more than these eight worldly winds that come our way, and see everyone and everything in us is that emptiness. Thomas Merton says from the perspective of the Christian tradition, at the center of our being is a point of nothingness, which is untouched by sin and illusion, a point of pure truth, a point or spark, which belongs entirely to God, which is never at our disposal, from which God disposes of our lives, which is inaccessible to the fantasies of our own mind or the brutalities of our will. This little point of nothingness and of absolute poverty is the pure glory of God in us. It is like a pure diamond blazing with the invisible light of heaven. It is in everybody, and if we could see it, we would see the billions of points of light coming together in the face and blaze of a sun that would make all the darkness and cruelty of life vanish completely. Looks like everyone's disappeared, Susu.
If they're not having a signal, they're not being able to hear it properly, so I think they all left. But I don't really understand what it means that they don't have a signal, but The reading is beautiful. Please continue.
Maybe stop recording. Maybe that's the problem. It doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah. If that's okay, I'll stop recording.
Let's see if that helps. Maybe
No, there's nobody there, so it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't matter either way.
Okay. So we can should we continue?
I'm just going to carry on enjoying not having people watch me on camera.
Okay.
You're only partly right that it's a bad signal.
Should we? We'll take care of turning everything off after, because please continue. It's beautiful and we're all here together.
Luckily, well, they can just read it later. So the gate of heaven is not in praise or gain if it is not also in blame and loss. If we over-identify with the eight winds and are dependent on other people's praise or opinions about us to be happy, our happiness will be insecure and unreliable. But if we can see our lives from the standpoint of that empty center, that point of pure truth, we naturally then have compassion for ourselves and the situations we encounter. And when the way we see ourselves is based on our own compassion and love for ourselves, which allows us to be forgiving of our mistakes and confident in our progress on our path, our happiness is solid and reliable. This non-reliance on external sources of approval and disapproval that float on the eight worldly winds brings us into our center, to the place of stillness and quiet that leads us to awareness of not self. So here's a meditation. And I invite you to take a comfortable either meditation posture or just make yourself comfortable. Just a position that you can maintain with ease, without straining. Let's settle back into this moment, finding a supportive posture. You can visualize your upper body from your waist up, reaching toward the sky like a tree. Now, allow the lower part of your body to root down into the earth. Feel the aliveness in your body in this moment as you ground into the earth and grow upward to the sky. Allow your whole body, your whole being, to simply be and rest. Now, let yourself sit in the center of the wheel, in that empty space where you can observe all the eight worldly winds blowing in and out. Though the wheel turns and turns, the eye of the wheel is still, and that's where you are. You observe the circumstances of your life, the losses, the gains, the pleasure, the pain, but you are beginning to get free from attachment and aversion to these things. Breathe deeply and let yourself rest in the still center, jumping off the endless and exhausting hamster wheel for a time. Allow yourself to open up and rest here. And now, see yourself as a wave on the ocean. You rise up out of the water and begin to move quickly. And there are also other waves around you. The other waves around you are moving more slowly. You feel special because you can go faster. But then a huge wave comes by, dwarfing you and passing you by, making you feel small and insignificant. But you and the slower waves, and you and the faster, bigger waves, are actually of the same nature. Let go of your waveform and go beneath the surface. Sink down. Down, down. Now you are ready to rest into the embrace of the ocean, and you touch the truth of your nature as water. Here, there is no fast or slow, big or small, and there is just water, the same substance that makes up the waves that were slower than you and the wave that was bigger than you. Wait a second. There is no more you, because now you're just water. Let yourself enjoy being immense, vast, empty of a separate self, content to contain everything around you. So that's prayers meditation. Please feel free to gently return to dry land. I deeply appreciate the eight worldly winds as a practice. And the way that I have in my own practice engaged with the eight worldly winds has shifted a great deal. I think when I first encountered it, I kind of used it as something to scold myself with. Oh, no, River. You know, you're really getting too attached to that praise. Or look at how you let someone's criticism of you just completely shake your faith in yourself. And when I felt that way, when I felt a little puffed up, or when I felt really torn down, I had a sense that I'd failed as a Buddhist in some important way. So in that sense, these eight winds were a kind of measure, which is ironic. I could see somebody really praising me. Like, oh, River, you take criticism so well. and praise does nothing for you. And I'm like, yes. I'm quite grounded in my practice. And now I feel different about it. There's a beautiful saying by the 20th century Zen teacher, Kodosuaki Roshi. He described Zazen as being anchored in the place where there's no better and no worse. And when I heard that phrase, I thought of a little boat in the Gulf Islands. You know, one of those like 27-footer sailboats that, you know, looks like it's going to get swallowed by medium-sized waves. And, you know, just sitting there in the calm waters of Montague Harbor, maybe on Galliano. And that is what Zazen is for me, I think, in many ways. To anchor myself in a place where I can rest. And I've noticed that that has really shifted my relationship to the places where I don't get to be anchored at harbor. Norman Fisher, our founding teacher, said this. I'm sure he said it many times, but he said it in a talk and kind of mentioned it. And it has stuck with me. He said, well, isn't our practice about becoming a full human person? And I think loving, praise, blame, loss, gain, taking those experiences in as a necessary component of my life is what it means to be a full human. And being in that still center, what Kyra is describing as that still center, anchored in that empty place, and being able to see the way these winds or these waves, they don't just push me around, but they actually make up the material of a life that I find deeply meaningful, is really beautiful and valuable to me. I think relating to the eight worldly winds in this way has helped me see how valuable every experience I have in my life is. I promise not to spoil anything, but I went to see the Barbie movie. And it's a profoundly Buddhist movie. Like it's a really Buddhist movie. And so I won't spoil anything, but the main problem of Barbie Land is that everything is perfect and pink and unchanging. And it's really wonderful. The Barbies think it's great. Every day is perfect. Nothing bad ever happens. And everything is completely plastic. And so, like, you know, when Barbie slides down her slide, she walks across her swimming pool because the water is just clear and plastic. And the movie is about discovering that a meaningful life, like an actual meaningful human life, is about going beneath the surface of things, like Kyra is saying, and accepting that within our suffering is true beauty. And that a life without suffering or change, without the all eight worldly winds, is actually not a life worth living. And so the way that I take that on in my practice is to see within, especially the difficult situations, like being criticized, or the signal cutting out, burning the orzo, missing, being late for zazen, to see where my life is happening in that experience. There's a really great Zen story where a Tenzo, the head cook of a monastery, is rushing to get lunch ready. There was like a ceremony, and so, you know, had to be gussied up for the ceremony, do all these bows, and then lunchtime. So the Tenzo was rushing, got to get lunch on, lunch out, and collected a bunch of stuff from the garden, and in her rush, chopped the head off a snake and put it in the soup. And, you know, because this is how the world works, the snake head ended up in the head teacher's soup. So the head teacher picks up the snake head and says, "Enzo, what is this?" And the Tenzo says, "Oh, thank you so much," and just eats it. And that's kind of how I feel invited to relate to the eight worldly winds, to just eat it. This is not how I've always felt. And I think there are a couple reasons, maybe some I won't get into, but I really am coming into a period of my life where I feel like the whole material of my life is worth being very interested in and eating. And I think my Zen practice is a big reason why I've come to appreciate it in that way. So those are my hopefully short reflections. Maybe we have time for, can you see the time over there, Susu? Do we have time for some group chat? How do I do for time? 8:25?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, that's so good. We definitely have time. Let's see if there it is. Kyra has questions for people. So here's some questions that Kyra has, and maybe we'll divide up. We don't have to worry about Zoom. So that's nice. Can you press stop recording, Susu, just to be on the safe side? Yeah, that's the one right there. Or you just give it a poke.
Yep, I think we've stopped it.
Yeah, that trackpad's a bit fussy.